Session number 9420, reel 20.
Mr. Bill Gilman, Reel 20. You were telling me about an occasion when a colleague of yours wouldn't let go of...
Yes, well, when I asked the inspector to come and take this man away, he said, "Do you want to charge him?" I said, "No." I said, "If he's prepared to leave, that's all I want him to do, take him away and let the doctor do his job." So, of course, he persuaded the man to leave this woman at the finish. And he shouted at me as the inspector advised him to go away and leave it to the services to deal with and the doctor. He shouted out, "I'll have you." He said, "Oh, I know you're on the council," he said, and "I'll show you." And he said, and so later, of course, he raised this at the Trades Council, where he was a member for his union, and they decided to send a protest at my action to the council, the emergency committee, and demanded an inquiry into my actions, and which they did. And there was quite a to-do about this. And the chairman of the committee, who didn't like me for some reason or the other, and incidentally was a heavy whiskey drinker too, he did his utmost to try and discredit me, you know, and said that I shouldn't have interfered with the man who was trying to help a helpless woman and built it all up. And he brought several things up that were of actions that I had taken under in service in incidents, and which, of course, I don't think he would have done, because he was conspicuous by his absence very often in heavy raids. But it wasn't for me to criticise my colleague's nature or anything like that in those cases. But anyway, it came to a vote as to whether I should be removed from office, and I was exonerated from all blame, and they justified what I did. I was able to justify.
How did you get on with the trade unions generally during this period?
All right. There was no difficulties there. Actually, the trade unions hadn't got much influence at that time, because everything was subordinated to the war itself. And we did ordinary matters that you could have probably made a newspaper article out of, never emerged in those days. Usually payments were made if they could be justified and applied for by the union, because it all came out of the General War Fund, and the main effort was to, it's the same with the payment for the munitions, you know, and the way they used to fix the wages, and there wasn't any industrial difficulties to speak of.
Can you remember any other incidents from raids? Anything that sticks out?
Well, I was up in one particular one that affected me personally, which was, of course, I've got a newspaper recording and a picture about. I was in my office at the control when Jerry came over, and he, as usual, he started the raid off with a shower of incendiary bombs, and I knew the sound of all bombs, whether they were heavy, light, or incendiaries, because the incendiaries used to plop like rain and on a board, plop, plop, plop. And I knew there was a heavy raid on, and they were coming on our building because they were above me. And, of course, I went down to control straight away, and, of course, they'd already got the message that next door was on, the roof was on fire. And it was a very heavy raid that night, and it was all over Stratford, our end of it, and the Broadway was well alight. And eventually I found out that, of course, and even in connection with the raid next door, that We hadn't got sufficient water supply. We couldn't, the firemen couldn't get sufficient water to deal with all the fires. But with ours, next to headquarters, they had to try and make a special effort. And, of course, they had to leave. They had to apologise and leave other big buildings and premises in the Broadway to concentrate helping us. But before they got there, I found out that their roof was on fire next door, and I immediately went in there into the Times. Of course, it was night time. This was, the staff had all gone, and we got in, and went upstairs and to the roof there. And of course, the roof was well alight then, and when I say well alight, you could see the beams where the whole of the incendiaries had come through. Some of them pierced the roof. If they hit a weak part of the roof, they'd go right through the slates and that. And I know that all that was there was the watchman for the Times. And I said, "Where's your water?" So he said, "Oh, is it?" He said, "It's on the floor, each floor. We've got a tap on each floor because the stairs there hadn't got lifts in those days, or at least Times hadn't building. It was a fairly big one right on the corner." And anyway, I remember we turning this water on, and there was just like a cat piddling, more or less, in the pails. And we carried them up and threw them. And I said, "This is no good. We can't do anything about this." I said, "We'll have to leave it to the fire brigade if they can," because they hadn't arrived then. So we went down the stairs and went to go out the front, and then there were some flames already and smoke coming right across the front. We couldn't get out the front, and in any case, it was locked. Because I'd got out of that off. I remember now, we didn't go down in the building. I got over the out of our place onto their roof, you know, the part that wasn't alight, and that's where I saw it on fire. And then, of course, we couldn't get out. I said, well, we better get out. He said, "Well, the front door's locked," he said. So he said, "And I haven't got the keys." So we went down. I said, "Have you got any other place?" He did, "Down the basement," he said. And he said, "There's a back way where the loading area is." So we went down there, and that was locked, bolted from the outside. And so I think they had some arrangement with this watchman for him to come out through our headquarters, you know, because I remember we couldn't get out the front because it was locked. And the back part, when we found that, was, as a matter of fact, the very man who the chairman, who I told you about, who disliked me personally, he happened to be outside, and all the voices were out there. We could hear, and we were banging at the doors, the loading bay, and they said, "Who's there?" I said, "Bill Gilman's in here with the watchman." I said, "We want to get out." So they said, "Well, this is a padlock on this door." I said, "So I heard Hearn say, who was the chairman, well, come on, let's get an axe and we'll break the door down." So I've forgiven him everything he said about me, because actually he helped to get that door open and we got out. Then the fire was then taken hold of the top of our own building. It had spread across. It was very bad because some of ours must have been alight at the time and had caught. And anyway, the firemen got there, and then the water started coming down the stairs. And there were stone steps, I remember, because it was a very solid building, that headquarters was. And I got down into the control room, and the girls were sitting there with the tears streaming down their faces, and because of the smoke was down there then. And we'd got a secondary headquarters at the cinema at the end of the back way, back alley, the end there, which we had it all ready for emergencies like this. And I snatched the phones from them and told them to get down. They didn't, I'll give them full marks, they were brave girls, you know. They just didn't want to let go, because the incidents were coming in fast and furious. The raid was all over the borough. I forget the date, it was a well-known night, because it's down in the ARP records of one of the worst raids we had. And I know the school in, because my wife, she had her school damaged too. She was at, I forget the name of the school, opposite the Broadway there. and she was a volunteer in charge of the centre there, Raid Centre, you know, where all the people went for their food and that, and shelter. And anyway, we got all the staff down to the secondary control at the finish, and well, we got over it that way. There was nothing much we could do about it. Half of it was ruined. We managed to get the black books, which was the receipt of all the documents which a controller had charge of. We managed to get that. And there was a bit of an inquiry as to, from the ministry, as to how this had happened. A control had caught fire, as if you could stop controls catching fire in a raid. But there you are. All we could do was to explain them what had happened and do the best we could. We had various records ruined, including our snooker tables as well, but that didn't matter. And it was just one of those things. And from then on, we used that area, but it was funny down there. And then we had to transfer from there over to a library because that one got damaged as well.
What, the cinema one?
The cinema one got damaged at the corner. There used to be the old Borough Theatre at one time, where Irving performed and all that. And it's quite a historic place, really. And it was later taken over by the cinema people. But anyway, we had to shift from there because of the damage, and not only that, it wasn't big enough, so we transferred to the Plaistow Library. And there, of course, I remember old Seacombe, Colonel Seacombe. He was really fagged out. He'd been on duty, you know, and he was a brave man, and he was a great bloke, really. He got killed eventually with a bomb because he came up out of his shelter on one raid night when he went back to his place in Upton Manor, and he'd reinforced his cellar, and he used to take the local neighbours in there, and he got there and the place was practically full, and there was a woman came up with a baby in her arms, and he said, look, I'm not going down again, you go down there. And when he came out, you know, when she went down there, a bomb came down and it severely injured him to the extent that they take him out to Queen Mary's Hospital, because when I heard about it on control, I immediately went down there. He was my opposite number. We got on well, although politically we opposed, but we're great pals. And he died just as I got there. I was sorry about that, because he was one of those casualties that we could have ill afforded not to have. And, of course, with the when we got down, I was thinking of the incident that on one occasion when we were using the library and Luscombe was there, he was sitting on one of these sloping desks. They got him to sit up there with his back against the wall, and I pulled his legs and he slid down at the top of this. They don't use them now in libraries, but I don't think so anyway. Oh no, he slid down onto the floor. I caught him back almost free at the floor, and he got up, he's swearing, you know, wanted to know what was going on. We all had a good laugh about that, but then I had to kick we had an alert. The raid was on, and I had to kick old Stanley Foreman, who was my driver, because they were laying about there. You know, we were having raids, clear, all clear, and a couple of hours afterwards, another raid would start. You know, the people don't realise how intense this was at that time, and bombs and guns were going all over the place. It didn't come amiss to me, because I was lucky in a way. It didn't affect me so much as most, because I'd seen all this, the villages alight in France and all that, you know, and the bombs and guns going, and so I more or less took it in my stride, and I must confess I almost enjoyed it, because to me it was exciting, you know, and really something to get your teeth into. And we had really hectic time there, when I went round, of course, there was people wandering about there, and I found one of my own aldermen Scolding, with his dog down Beckton Road there. His place had been bombed when he'd gone back, and he hadn't got anywhere to go. And this is how we had to help one another and deal with emergencies. You look for it.
How did the council, what role did their council have? When I mean, obviously a lot of people were made homeless. What measures were taken to either repair houses or to provide temporary or permanent accommodation?
A system there which was approved by the government and had to be approved by the government because we couldn't afford it because it was an added additional expenditure to the ordinary living there was a term for it profit and loss or some particular term they applied to it. The contractors were put in anyway and they did a job and patches of where it was patchable, some of them were completely destroyed. But actually, when the final count took place, we had 14,000 houses destroyed. This is official. And we had thousands that were of almost uninhabitable but had been patched up, you know. And we had room. Such destruction take place in certain areas that we were able to build a 1,000-house estate like we did. And we had 3,000 house estate down in southern in Silvertown and round.
That's after the war you built these estates?
That was during the war, yes.
During or after?
Oh no, the estates weren't built during the war. You couldn't build anything during the war.
What did
All you
do?
Could do was to patch up and houses that had been evacuated. They were left, and I've had to break windows and push people in and say, "There you are. Make the best of it. That's all we can give you because there's nobody living here." And we had to break the law. I with an inspector of the police, smashed the windows of Young and Martin's on the corner of the Broadway there to get axes out in order to try and clear the way when we came across some of these incidents, especially the one in Deanery that I told you about. And when we got to the bottom of that and they cleared that out, we found an airman had just come home on leave, laid out with crushed to death, and his wife. And there was a television untouched in front of them that they'd been watching, and they were both the sides of the wall had come in at the back and smashed them down, and we had to clear. Well, I was helping a bit, you know, where I could. I didn't want to interfere with the services because I was there. It was an incident I got to early on. As I say, this poor bloody airman, he was dead and they dragged him out there and ambulances took him away and his wife, they were dead as well. And there was all sorts of incidents.
You say 14,000 destroyed. Were you able to find accommodation for all these families?
Yes, well, we had to put them into temporary accommodation, you see. There were so many houses that had been left... you know, evacuated. I mean, and we had to find shelter too for them, and in some cases we advised them to get out, you know, with the relatives where the children had gone, where they'd taken them. I mean, it was all a matter then of agreement, you know, on either side that they would take them. And we did our best. You had to deal with it. It was an emergency, or else shift them out to further boroughs further away where they weren't so affected by raids or likely to be affected as near as you could judge.
Are there any other specific raids or incidents you remember during that period?
Well, no, there were much of a muchness, to be honest, and of course fire was the biggest enemy of the lot in the raids. There were some really bad places, and of course I remember the big shelter that held about 250 people were behind the Woolworths in the High Street, not far from our control. It was just across the road there. That whether it was a landmine or not, I don't know, but it had been hit and it had been blocked at both ends, apparently. And we got the emergency call, a very serious incident. And I remember I called in all the DDs that I could find, and I know I had a big vehicle because we had...
DDs? What?
Daredevils. And we had a fleet of 15 Armstrong Sidleys, more or less tanks. They were bloody great limousines. They were council cars, you know, it was a council fleet. And I had one allocated to me with a driver, Stan Foreman. He was with me right through. And... I sent out a call for all the DDs available to that they were wanted to go down to this incident and see if we could help, because they were asking for help to get people out where they could get at them. There was a lot of people killed in there at the time the bomb dropped. And of course I remember, I shall never forget, because the DDs, this was something exciting for them. They got on this and they were on the bonnet and on the roof of this car, and the mud guards, there were big broad mud guards in those days on either side, and you couldn't see the vehicle or the I wasn't driving, Stanley was driving, but I went down on my own. I had a velocipede there, you know, a little pop that I had. And there is a picture of it. You've seen it, haven't you? And we got them down there, and that was an exciting incident. And of course, what was the other occasion that crossed my mind just now while I was telling you this? Is one of the things that I did omit to mention to you was when the war broke out, and we had that first terrible raid that started on that morning. Or that afternoon, really, they really pelted it. That was when the Battle of Britain took place, by the way. That was the Saturday, and I rushed down to control straight away and got the car, got Stanley, and by the time that began to get reports in and made sure everything was okay with the DDs, the report came in that the depot at Stratford there had been hit, a new depot, practically a new depot with concrete made place. And of course they'd hit, it had been a direct hit, and that was where I lost one of my DDs, because I tried to get him out from under the concrete. The whole roof had come down on the structure itself, and he was, I could see an arm sticking out underneath with it, and I knew it was a DD because of his badge. I could see his badge on his arm. And the firemen were applying hoses on it, and they advised me not to go in there because I had to crawl under, because it was almost near to the, practically onto the ground. And I could see that I got hold of his arm and tugged it, but I couldn't move him. He was crushed, really. I didn't at the time, he was dead, but I couldn't move him, and I knew he was in a pretty bad shape. And so I had to give it up, and I came out. And when I went back to control again, there was an appeal for someone to go to find out what had happened, because the Silvertown bypass, which was not the Silvertown Way, it was another bypass that had been built over previous to the war starting. And someone said that it had been fractured and couldn't be used because a bomb had dropped on either side of it, and the road had dropped, the first part of the road bypass where it had begun on the ascent had dropped 6 feet, and no vehicles could get over it either way. So they wanted a volunteer to go around the East End way over the swing bridge past the Beckton Gasworks. And I remember I said, I'll go. What is it you want to find out? And they said, we want to find out what's happened to the Silvertown depot, because the telephones were out as well. That's how bad the raid was. And that's where the old DDs came in handy, and I was very pleased about this. But I got Stanley out, and we went round. If he was here now, he could tell you the story. You know, we were going through, driving down by the Silvertown Way, and of course the tar works, India Rubber and Gutta Percha Telegraph and Telegraph Works, Cable Works down there were all alight, and its tidal basin station was on fire, and the tar that had built was still alight and going up and coming down, alight in pieces all round. And I said, we used to say in the trenches, send it down Jacob when we had a barrage, you know. And he said, oh, don't say that, sir. But, you know, it was exciting to me. I mean, I didn't take any notes of it because, as I say, I'd had all this. It was just a job. And the funny part, what amused me, this is worth relating because I'll never forget it. We got to Woolwich Police Station. I don't know whether you know Woolwich, but right next to it, just before you come onto the Woolwich ferry, there is a police station, the Woolwich Police Station. A big, huge, red-built brick structure. It was then. I haven't been down there for years now. And everything was dead quiet there. Of course, there were windows and the walls were all sandbagged up, you know, and the usual way of the public buildings. And there wasn't anybody to be seen. And there was nothing down at Silvertown we had come through. It was dead. And when I got down there, the police station door was open. I said, I wanted to find the way to the depot. It was blocked, you see. And I said, well, we'll go to the police station. There was no wardens about there. So we got to the police station. I went inside. Is anybody about? And there was a movement, you know, and a couple of police officers come from under the tables there. That looked a bit rueful, but they were. I didn't blame them, really, because the raid was still going on, you know. And they dusted themselves down, and I introduced myself and said who I was. And I said, I'm trying to find out the way to get to the Silvertown depot, our depot for the ARP. And I said, the road's blocked. He said, yes, sir. He said, you'll have to go round by the road alongside the docks. And that was right round the back of the houses. Most of those were down. And this bloody stuff was still coming down, you know, and the fires were still going on. It was proper hell there going on. So I said, well, what's happened to the people? He said, oh, he said, they've been evacuated across the Thames over to Woolwich, South Woolwich, because this was North Woolwich, you see, on this side of the Thames, and the river divided us. And apparently the LCC had evacuated all those everybody had been herded out, you know, with all the police and everything else. And I wouldn't have known this if the police hadn't told me. And he said, there's nothing we can do. He said, there was no point in patrolling the streets, he said, because the wardens have gone back to your control, because there's nobody, that most of the houses are down. And that was where the houses had gone down like a pack of cards, you know. They hit one, and they all went down that way. I shall never forget it, when we were on our way to this back road. Anyway, we got through to the depot, and there they were, and they damaged, there had no water. The bombs had smashed the water supply, and the mains had gone. There was no lights or anything like that. The power supply had gone. They were in a dreadful state. So I said, well, evacuate. And you won't be able to do anything tonight, but wait till the raid's over, and tomorrow morning, or as soon as you can, sort everything out, what you can sort out. And you bet the best thing to do, I'll get instructions as to where you can go, and then come back and let you know. And I did. I went back, and I couldn't drive a car at that time, but Stanley wasn't available, because he'd had about 24 hours on duty. And I'd been having driving lessons. That's where I learned to drive during the war, in the yard there with the transport department. Old White, young White, his father was an old councillor on, but he was in charge of the transport depot, and he taught me to drive himself. And I didn't know how to start the bloody thing properly, you know, because it was a different car that they found for me down at the depot. But anyway, I led them out the procession. I remember I was dead slow, and they was hooting me at the back because I wouldn't go fast, you know. I wasn't sufficiently competent then. But it's one of those amusing incidents that take place, you know, when you got these sort of things happen. Oh, it was enjoyable in a way, but it's the things that have put you on your mettle, that you've got to make your mind up as to how you're going to deal with them. And you've got to do it one way or the other. You've got to make some decision, whether it's a right one or wrong one. You've got to try to leave it in the hands of the gods. So, what with that and all the other incidents that took place, it was really something.